The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the Squawker Talker is brought to you by Beer 52. Beer 52 is the world's number one craft beer club and delivers crates of hand-picked craft beer to your door. Squawker Talker listeners can get £12 off a crate and two free beers by using the code SQUAWKER at checkout. So if you like a good deal on beer, visit beer52.com.
Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. We have got an absolute avalanche of football news, results and previews to get through, and trying to help me make sense of all of this is our chief reporter, Greg Stobart. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Nick.
How's it going?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent news. Also joining us from the London Evening Standard is James Benge. Hello, James.
Hello, how's it going?
Not bad, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. I've interrupted my holiday to be here.
Oh, well, thanks.
You're welcome. I'm always happy to.
Our listeners don't realise how good they've got
it. They should. Yeah. They do now.
Okay, fantastic. Also joining us, ex-Squawker employee, James Dale from Sky Sports. Hello, James.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Very well. How are you?
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
It is. It's good to be back.
Bit nostalgic?
It is. Very weird coming into the office.
It was only like 8 months ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you know. Football moves on quick. So.
Football does move quickly. Speaking of football moving quickly, big news today. Well, last night, Stobes. Leicester City have sacked Claudio Ranieri. Huge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit conflicted about this one. I'm not that surprised, really. We've been sitting in this pod saying Leicester are in big trouble for quite a while now. Pragmatically, you can see why the owners might want to make a change because they are heading down. But what really gets me is the stories about the players briefing against the manager, having meetings with the owners, basically the way he's lost the dressing room so quickly after doing something that will never happen again in Leicester's history, one of the greatest sporting achievements of all time. And I've got to say, the fact that the players have got so big for their boots that they're forcing out the manager who won in the Premier League less than a year ago is an absolute disgrace.
James, I mean, that's probably the most surprising aspect of this, is that the reason for the sacking is that Ranieri seems to have lost the dressing room, which is something which seemed to be completely the opposite last season. The whole reason that they won the title was because Ranieri seemed to galvanise them, if anything.
Well, yeah, there are a few claims coming out that the players were unhappy that Ranieri seemed to take all the credit, but wait a minute, who else gets the credit? They were a team that were battling against relegation. I mean, I know Nigel Pearson helped pull them clear. I mean, I think it's utterly unacceptable. Pat Riley, legendary NBA coach, talks about the disease of me, and that was so apparent, even in the summer. Like, you look back and you kind of see, I think, you know, enormous credit to Vardy at the time for, you know, turning down that Arsenal move, but the way that they've all acted, it's, you know, I think Stobes hit the nail on the head. It's phenomenally disrespectful to that man. And, you know, I understand that there's no such thing as loyalty in football anymore, but Brian Clough, he was allowed to take Nottingham Forest down effectively, because they had respect for what he'd achieved at the club. No one has achieved anything like Claudio Ranieri since Brian Clough, and I think they should have stood by him until Claudio made that decision. You know, maybe he'd have made the decision to fall on his own sword at some stage, but you've got to have respect for a man who's achieved one of the greatest miracles in football history. I think it's totally unacceptable.
James, it's sort of a bit of a cynical week for football with the whole Piegate and Ranieri getting sacked. But from an objective point of view, was this the right decision for Leicester City Football Club?
I think so. I think if you completely ignore the Premier League last season and you look at it fresh from this season, with 13 games to go, it's that classic thing of, right, we need a change. We need someone to come in, make an impact, even if it's literally just to keep them up. You know, Ranieri, he won the title, but if you want to stay in the division, you know, Ranieri's not going to do it at the moment. So I think it was the right decision.
But if they stay up, and they probably should stay up comfortably if they play to their full potential under a new manager, then there've got to be serious questions the owners ask that playing staff, because it's far too good for where it is now, including the players that have come in the summer. It's a top 10 squad.
Mm. Also, what an opportunity for someone coming in. I mean, he could potentially still get to the Champions League later rounds, or even, you know, win it potentially.
Yeah. So, who do we think's going to come in?
I think Roberto Mancini's a decent shout. I mean, one thing they've got to do is sort out the defence. Mm. He's another title-winning manager as well. He knows the Premier League, a bit more flair. I mean, the Nigel Pearson one just seems odd.
Silly.
To me, yeah. I think Mancini would make sense, certainly short-term, shore them up until the end of the season, keep them up and then have a go at it next season.
Warburton, anyone? No? Any other shouts?
I really like Warburton as a manager, but you can't be throwing someone with no Premier League experience in at the deep end.
I mean, whoever comes in has got to sort out the defence first and foremost. I mean, how they won a title with Robert Hooke, Wes Morgan and Danny Simpson at the
mind back, boggles.
It's absolutely ridiculous, and they're where they should be with those defenders. They've got some great midfielders and attacking players, but, you know, Hooke and Morgan are not good. Yeah, they're not good players, are they,
no. Nick?
They're not good players at all. I don't think, other than, I mean, you can look back to their recruitment last summer and in January, it's been pretty poor because it was quite clear they needed to sign a couple more defensive-minded players and they didn't do it.
Let's move on to more bad news for English clubs, this time in Europe. Spurs 2, Ghent 2. James, Pochettino looked absolutely livid after the final whistle. Spurs go out of the Europa League. Dele Alli sent off for an absolutely horrific challenge.
That challenge in itself, I was reminded of that headline from the Sun when we went out of the World Cup in 1998, sort of 10 lions and one stupid boy, and it really was like that, and that's what cost them the tie in reality. Like, you know, they were playing well. I think you can't really talk about Wembley curse anymore. The last two games at Wembley, they've played pretty well, but Dele Alli has cost them that tie there because they kept having to leave space at the back. That's why Ghent got back into it and got that goal 10 minutes before the end.
James, Dele Alli always looks a little bit on the... He's a great personality. You know, he interviews very well. He's obviously very fun. He's a young guy. But he always looks on the edge of frustration on the pitch. He seems to be quite easily wound up. He's sort of reminiscent of a young Wayne Rooney in that fashion. Does he need to sort of stamp that out of his game, or does it add to his game? Or
tell him to stamp anything.
Yeah,
good point.
I think so. I think it's that whole thing of, you know, we talk about it with Jack Wilshere, we talk about it, Wayne Rooney, Steven Gerrard, having this, you know, English aggressive streak that kind of makes them what they are. But in truth, that isn't going to make them into the best player in the world. You know, it's going to only get them sent off in big games. And I think that's an English trait we kind of celebrate, but actually it's something that we do need to stamp out.
I mean, there's a line, and there's slightly over the line, and then there's that challenge. That was a leg-breaking challenge. Last year, he punched someone in the stomach. Mm. I mean, it's not just he's got to rein it in a little bit. He's got to learn, because these are massive mistakes. And at the end of last season, Tottenham had to go to Chelsea without Dele Alli when he was in really good form, and it cost them a chance of going for the title. Mm. This year, they're out of the Europa League, which some might say is a blessing in disguise. But as James said, Tottenham would have comfortably won last night with 11 men. Even with 10 men, they were all over a pretty poor Ghent side, it's got to be said, and Alli cost them.
And I mean, that's going to be a real problem next season as well. He's going to get at least a three-game ban. I think they'll probably get into the Champions League, but
half the group stage.
That's half the group stage. And UEFA, I think, would be entitled to go for a five-game ban, which requires sort of serious assault. So you've got to prove intent there. But if you look at the sort of the build-up to that, Alli doesn't get a free kick he thinks he deserves and goes in so hard on that guy. It's not even a leg breaker. It's a career-ending challenge, potentially, that. And, you know, you saw that the guy couldn't carry on. Mm. I mean, I'm, you know, genuinely, as a football fan, you have to be worried for that guy. That's a real, real bad tackle. And it's a real problem.
Speaking about the game specifically, James, what went wrong for Spurs? They had 25 attempts. Harry Kane had 5, not a single one on target, had an own goal. A bit of a shocker for him. But mean, realistically, this is a game that should have been a bit of a cakewalk for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say exactly what went wrong. I mean, you can just look at it and say, Harry Kane, you know, had he finished, you know, some of the chances, then they would have gone through. And had Ali not sort of got sent off, then, like we've already said, they would have gone through. So it's not a case of necessarily Tottenham being poor. I think it's more just a case of that being able to cut it in the final games, in the big moments, you know, under the lights.
And I think that's a mentality issue for Tottenham. We were here last week talking about they'd gone to Anfield and mentally they'd look pretty fragile. They've done it a couple of times already at Wembley this season at big moments. And like I said earlier, even with 10 men, they were all over Ghent. Spurs did not play badly at all, actually. I don't think Ghent are a very good team, but Spurs were absolutely dominant. But they didn't have that little edge, that mental, you know, someone to step up and do something.
And they conceded special. Two goals foolishly. Spurs have the best defensive record, best defence in the league, probably one of the best in Europe. And they failed to keep a single clean sheet at all of their 9 games at Wembley. I mean, that's an issue there.
Dyer's a real problem at the moment. I mean, he seemed to have slowly settled into that back three, but I think, you know, going back to the indiscipline thing, he is the most indisciplined there. He picked up a yellow card for no reason whatsoever because he was a bit annoyed with the assistant referee. And, I mean, he was at fault for both of the goals.
He's had a really poor season, Eric Dyer. I think he's suffering a little bit because he's a midfielder playing in defence and he's been playing in defence all season. And I think he's pretty much said that he doesn't see himself as a centre-back. He was England's best player at the Euro in midfield. He was excellent for Tottenham last year. And I think he's actually a bit frustrated with his role in the team at the moment. Certainly, he's lost a bit of concentration. Defensively, he's been poor. And on the ball, he's been poor as well. And he might need a rest, actually.
There's a lot of question marks over the squad, Stobes. You broke a story yesterday about Paul Mitchell leaving the club. Does it look like Spurs are going to have a rethink in terms of how they add names to the squad?
Yeah, well, firstly on that, I think we've seen it in the fact that Pochettino's played his full-strength team in a Europa League game against a mid-table Belgian side yesterday, that he doesn't trust his squad anymore because he's been bought these players, Sissoko, Janssen, and Kudu and the like, and he's had a look for a few months and he's decided, not for me, thanks, start again. And it's left him with 12, 13 players.
Who are knackered.
Yeah, and with a couple of injuries, Danny Rose and Lamela are still out. He's basically got 11 players that he can trust, maybe Son off the bench, and that's about it. And it's a problem for Tottenham, which is why I suggested earlier going out of Europa League isn't the end of the world because they can concentrate on the league and the FA Cup because the squad is so thin because he's been let down by the recruitment. I mean, Pochettino himself has to take some responsibility. He has the final say, but Paul Mitchell arrived as a transfer guru and Spurs have wasted a lot of money that they can't afford to waste because they have to be more intelligent than the rest of the top six in the transfer market. They've got a £750 million stadium to pay for. And you can't see where the star quality is coming. You know, where's the actual logic to the recruitment? There's none there at the moment, really. So Paul Mitchell handed in his notice in August, managed to sneak in Moussa Sissoko before he left, did nothing for about 6 months, and now he's finally left. But there has been a restructure behind the scenes at Tottenham. A couple of scouts have gone as well. The chief scout, Ian Broomfield, left. They brought in a few more. This Steve Hitchin has come in as the new chief scout, and I think Pochettino likes the cut of his jib and he's rated really highly. I think he was very influential in his first spell at Tottenham in bringing Luka Modric to Spurs.
He's good.
Damian Comoli's given him most of the credit for signing Luis Suarez from Ajax at Liverpool. So I think Spurs are starting to think, okay, let's just sign one player or two players, but let's be really ambitious. Let's go for Kylian Mbappe, and if we don't get him, we'll look to someone else. But let's stop messing around with Vincent Janssens and Clinton NGs and Nkudus and all these kind of players.
Clinton and Pace. That was one of the most disastrous transfers that's ever existed.
But he wasn't very... It made no sense at the time, did it? You're French.
I'm French.
You know a bit about French
having
football.
Watched Clinton and G and George Kevin and Kudu, I can tell you neither of them were good enough for a top four side.
And everyone said that.
Yeah.
So why did Spurs sign them?
It's just money. Just spend it. Why not? It's Stoke next for Spurs. Stobes, how important is it to just get cracking straight away with a win for Pochettino? His players look tired, though.
It's important, but they're going to have 3 days, and he played his full team against Ghent, and they played with 10 men for an hour, so the extra running. Stoke have been rested as well, so you know it's the kind of game where the Europa League sides, these are the ones they curse, because I could easily see Spurs dropping points at the weekend.
You never want to be facing a team like Stoke when you're desperate for a result. They're so unpredictable. You know, you don't know who's going to turn up, do you?
Well, you know that Saido Berahino is going to turn up. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I mean, if anyone's going to be motivated to prove their worth on that day, it'll be Berahino. He can get back at Jeremy Peace again from a distance and remind Spurs that they were right to really want him. Yeah, I agree with Greg. It's going to be a tough old day for Spurs.
Very close encounter. Okay, who do we think are favourites? Do we think United are favourites for the Europa League?
Yep.
Yeah?
I can't see anyone else.
No?
Yeah.
No.
And Mourinho's going to take it very seriously as well.
Yeah, he played his first 11 in both legs.
Yeah, what was that? I mean, it's going to backfire because they're going to be out Henrik Mkhitaryan for the League Cup final, but, you know, he loves to win a trophy. And I think it's United's best route into Europe.
Into the Champions League.
Best part of Europe.
It is their best part of Europe because the top five aren't going to drop enough points to let them back in, and they're going to drop quite a few points because they're going to keep taking the Europa League seriously.
Mm.
So Thursday, Sundays, and they'll be going to all sorts of bizarro places around Europe. It's their best chance of getting into the Champions League. I think Mourinho knows it, and also he'll love the fact that it gives him something to complain about.
Oh, yes. He does like complaining.
He does love a complaint. So,
speaking of the Champions League, we've got to cover off the games. I mean, James, let's kick off by trying to make sense of Man City 5, Monaco 3. Two teams, zero defenders. Actually, I lie, there was one defender, Kamil Glick, but come the 70th minute, he looked so tired for covering for all of the fullbacks that that he sort of just packed it in. What a mental game.
It was great to watch. I mean, as a neutral, I loved it. But in terms of as a City fan, I would just be kind of head in my hands, really. I mean, John Stones, you know, he couldn't keep up with a 31-year-old striker with history of knee problems. So, you know, I think that kind of says it all, really. Mm. The fact that Falcao ran him ragged, Otamendi was being Otamendi. And, you know, there's just no defence at all at City. There is no defence.
They've conceded more goals than any other team left in the competition, Stoves. I mean, they're still looking for a commanding centre-back, which... They've spent so much money on this problem and it's just not solved effectively.
I think Mangala's playing quite well for Valencia.
They have a buyback clause in that.
And I hear City fans saying, oh, you know, we need to get Vincent Kompany back in the side as if he's been any good in the last two or three years when he has played anyway. Part of it's structural as well. I don't, you know, it's all well and good having two good centre-backs, but you need the full-backs as well. It's a whole unit. It's your goalkeeper and your back four. Mm. And they've got Caballero's mildly better than Bravo, but I don't think they've got the goalkeeper, the fullbacks, and they're certainly short at least one centre back as well. But it makes for great entertainment, doesn't it? I mean, you know, they scored five goals in a first leg, and it's not over.
Yeah,
there's a moment with Otamendi when he gave away the penalty on Falcao, and the assistant commentator got it spot on when he was like, "Oh, we just didn't realise Falcao was there when he was going for the ball," and you're like, you're a £40 million defender and you're incapable of doing the basics, like knowing where the striker is. As Stone says, absolutely brilliant, though. I love it.
Did Man City need a replacement striker? Aguero got a couple of goals, looked pretty lively, looked very sharp. Gabriel Jesus is very exciting, but wouldn't that money be better spent on...
I was having a look at the games when Jesus started, and I know it's a really small sample size, but they only conceded one goal in three games. And I do think that what Jesus does is he presses relentlessly. Mm. And if you're a Guardiola team with that flimsy back four, you need a front three, front four that will press your opponents into sort of submission. Mm. I think actually they did. I think that even though Aguero's playing quite well, he's still not got much of a future while Guardiola's there.
James, let's talk about Monaco. They're the most exciting young team in Europe right now. They're great to watch.
Yeah, I wouldn't even just say young team. I mean, it's great seeing a player like Falcao just come straight back into his own. And, you know, I think there is just so much attacking talent in that side. Mbappe looks every bit like Thierry Henry. Mm. So, you know, I think they are definitely one of the most exciting teams in Europe.
That Bernardo Silva is tiny.
He's special.
He's so good.
He's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, he's better than David Silva.
People, it's going back to Spurs. People were, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
going back to Spurs, people were laughing at Spurs when they, you know, they lost to Monaco, but...
Decent result. Only lost by one goal twice. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, Monaco, I think they were a bit unlucky, actually. I still think they were the better side. They were just incredibly naive, and a couple of key moments went against them. I mean, Falcao scored the penalty, 3-1, with the pace they had as well to counter-attack against City, I think they would have cleaned up. But for some reason, at 3-2, they wanted to score a fourth goal, which they just didn't need to do. And that's like that. I mean, in terms of the tie as well, that Caballero save from Falcao at the end could be absolutely massive.
One of the worst penalties.
Well, what I would say is, if people are talking about Leonardo Jardim as the next Arsenal manager, I think he's proven his case as a Wenger successor there with with that defence and that attack.
Sorted.
See you at the Emirates.
Sorted. Sevilla 2, Leicester 1. I mean, Leicester are just ridiculously lucky to still be in this tie, aren't they?
So incredibly lucky.
One of the most one-sided tactical battles I've ever seen in the Champions League.
I mean, I turned this on... For the reaction and then kind of watch the highlights. And I don't get where this idea that this is Leicester's result of the season is coming from. I mean, they were ripped to shreds on both flanks. Just about staying in it. Lucky goal from Vardy. But yeah, I mean, the idea that they're going to be able to save this at the King Power with a new manager or whatever. Nah, Sevilla were way better than they were.
Quick word on Steven Nzonzi, Dalo.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, he's proven himself to be arguably the best player in La Liga right now. I think
it's crazy. Where did that come from?
He's just his passing, his retention, his tackling. You know, he's looking every bit the player that he never quite was in the Premier League, but everyone thought he could be. So, I mean, personally, I'd love to see him back in the Premier League. I think it'd be a great signing for someone.
Most passes completed in the Champions League this season, 91% accuracy, thrilling to watch.
Definitely, and I think, you know, going back to the game, I mean, in the first half, I think Sevilla had 75% possession and Leicester had something like one interception. I mean, that is like, for a team to have that much possession and to the other team to only make one interception shows just how out of it Leicester were. And that was largely down to Nzonzi, who was just absolutely bossing it.
Stobes, Rio Ferdinand said after the game that Sevilla won't fancy against the King Power, but their own home stadium is an absolute cauldron of noise. You know, it's a ridiculous statement. Surely, I mean, Leicester aren't going to pull this out, even with a new manager.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolute rubbish from Ferdinand. Sevilla play plenty of big games in incredible atmospheres. They've got players who've been brought up in environments where they're a very noisy stadium.
They won away at Dynamo Zagreb.
It's a bit like, you know, when Arsenal played Sutton, people were like, oh, these Arsenal, they won't fancy it. As if Alexis Sanchez didn't grow up playing in bare feet in a slum, you know? It's like, come on. Like, rubbish. Absolute rubbish. I mean, what I would say is it might galvanise Leicester a little bit. New manager, bit of noise. But Sevilla, I mean, the whole point of two legs is the better team, the quality shines through, even if Leicester can get a lucky goal and Sevilla will walk it in the second leg.
Let's move on to the rest of the Champions League games. Leverkusen 2, Atletico Madrid 4. James, another high-scoring affair. Simeone's Atleti always seem to turn up at this stage of the season, don't they?
Yeah.
We seem to get into, like, you know, spring, and they seem to get their swagger
This is their time, and the goals they were scoring were phenomenal. I think Saul's amazing. Everyone seemed to miss Griezmann's as well, the way it just cannoned back down off the crossbar. They look a force because, you know, I mean, in a way, the only surprising bit about that game was that they conceded two goals, and that'll be the thing. No doubt afterwards, Simeone will be going, "Don't you dare do that again! Because I'll kill you if you do." They look on fire, and it's between them and the team we'll be talking about next.
Really,
who's gonna win it?
Really, yeah. Well, that's a cliffhanger. Before we get to that, Yannick Carrasco is slowly emerging as an absolutely fantastic player. He's had the fifth most shots in the Champions League, James, this season. He's after Ronaldo, Cavani, Lewandowski and Messi. He's a winger. Special talent.
He is. And I think with Athletic, there's so much potential in the attack. And it's Simeone's almost finally realising that. And kind of from last season where, you know, they got to the final having scored about three goals or something ridiculous to now scoring four away from home. And it's just like, it's like he's finally realised, oh, I've actually got some attacking players. Maybe I should use them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Barcelona this weekend in La Liga again, you know, I think this is the very much the point of the season where Atleti can kind of kick on and really produce something.
Any hope for Leverkusen? They don't seem to have the tools for the job.
No, I just think they were beaten by a better side, really. I think, you know, Leverkusen are a decent club. They've got good players throughout. But when it comes to, you know, an Atleti firing on all cylinders, they were never going to really be able to contest.
Okay. Porto 0, Juventus 2. Put this one in the books, Stobes. It's done. Piazza and Dani Alves sink Porto. Alex Telles got an early red card, and that was it from there. It was a nice touch from Alves, though, because he went over to celebrate his goal with Lichtsteiner, who's ahead of him in the pecking order at right back. That shows you sign of a nicely assembled squad, that.
I didn't see that, actually.
No?
No,
it was a nice touch.
But I read that Bonucci and Allegri had some big dressing room row.
Well, apparently Allegri's leaving at the end of the season. That's the latest. That's from Gazzetta dello Sport this morning.
He might be round the corner from us.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
What, going to Leicester?
Well, they like an Italian, don't they?
Yeah. James, you really like the look of Juve.
Yeah, I think they're good. I think they're my favourites, to be honest. I think it's just that it's what you were saying there about Dani Alves coming on for Lichtsteiner, Piazza, another substitute. Marchisio didn't even get off the bench, and they left Bonucci out. That is incredible levels of squad depth, and they've got a brilliant front three in Mandzukic, Dybala, Gonzalo, Higuain. So, yeah, try and beat that. I think they've got the best depth in Europe.
Only conceded 2 goals in the Champions League this season, Juve. That's ridiculous.
That is unbelievable. And the thing with Juve is they don't really have to worry about the league so much. They can focus on the Champions League. And I think we've said this a few times, but this does feel like a year where one of the other teams can have a chance. It's always Bayern Munich. The last few years, it's always felt like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid and Barcelona, but they've all got their own significant flaws this season. It's a real chance for a side like Juventus or even Man City, whoever, or Atleti. It's a chance for one of those sides to really have a go at it. And Juventus have been close enough recently, and I think they've got a really good chance.
Quarterfinals are going to be exceptional. Let's go back to some domestic football. And out of nowhere, League Cup final. It's happening this weekend.
Always sneaks up on you, the League
Cup
final.
It sneaks up on you. It's always earlier than you think.
Over Femi Martins Day.
Yeah.
As Birmingham fans remember it.
As we all know. I think that's also how Arsenal fans remember it, is over Femi Martins Day. Europa League spot at place here for the winner, James. Most importantly, it's a chance for Mourinho to sort of cement his reign as Man United manager. Took Van Gaal 2 seasons to get an FA Cup, but Mourinho would love to set the tone here with just some silverware for the United fans to get their teeth into.
I think for him, the League Cup is the EFL Cup or whatever we call it is hugely important. I mean, and you saw that with both Chelsea reigns. He got started with big wins, and I think that set the tone then to go on and win the title. I don't think he's ever actually won the real sort of domestic double. But he always seems to do very well in the League Cup. I think he sees it as a good staging ground. I think it's important for United to keep that trophy-winning feeling going. They'd be sort of double cup holders, which is quite an achievement considering how much of a mess they've been.
Definitely spent the money to justify getting success. James, these games are often surprisingly high quality. Last year's final was excellent between City and Liverpool. Probably City's best performance of the season. What are going to be the key tactical battles across the pitch here? Claude Puel's got his diamond and he likes to rotate his squad a lot. Mourinho has a very, very settled first 11, but he played quite a full-strength team in the Europa League. What's going to be the key sort of tactical...
I think how Yoshida handles Ibrahimovic is going to be really interesting. I mean, obviously they're not going to have Van Dijk. And, you know, Southampton have got to the final having not conceded... Have they even conceded?
No, they haven't.
So, I mean, you know, they've obviously proved themselves to be a very good defensive side, but Ibrahimovic has an awful habit of bullying defenders out of the game. And, you know, I think if Yoshida can prove himself to be able to, you know, step up to the plate, then that could be, you know, where Southampton then surprise everyone.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Ibrahimovic on our Squawkabet, one of our special markets this weekend. Ibrahimovic to have more shots than Gabbiadini at 4-7. The banker, Stobes, isn't it? You can sign up for Squawkabet with the code POD. £10 free bet. How about that?
I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it? God, do it. Fantastic. What do we reckon for the League Cup? Are we just saying United?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably. It'd be nice if Southampton got
it. If it wasn't Mourinho, I'd give Southampton more of a chance, but we just know how much he loves to win this competition.
Yeah. James?
Yeah.
Yeah. Three reluctant years.
I think it'll be a little bit like they played right at the start of the season, didn't they? And it was a drab 0-0, and then Ibrahimovic scored a header quite near the end. I think it'll be a bit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mourinho's final form is generally along those lines. Yeah.
Valencia to Ibrahimovic.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Premier League. This weekend, 6 games get through this weekend, and it's really hotting up in the relegation battle. Relegation fever is among us.
relegation
Mr.
fee.
Bench.
Get your relegation.
Get your relegation.
Get your relegation vaccines.
Relegation jab. Because the fever's here.
Allardyce could do with a relegation jab.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's Palace versus Borough, and these two look, you know.
And like, you know it's going to be a thriller.
Yeah.
Palace's whimsical defence against
Middlesbrough's toothless attack.
it's almost certainly going to be a dreadful game that you can't help but be intrigued and engrossed by. Palace, the last time they hosted a relegation rival, did not exactly paint themselves in glory, getting hammered by Sunderland. And the atmosphere around Selhurst Park, for once, probably in all the time I've covered London football, the fans have turned, and Palace fans never turn, which tells you just how bad things are going. But at the same time, and they need to, some teams need to really drag Middlesbrough into this, because they're just a little bit clear, but they're clearly not a very good team.
Yeah. James, the thing about Middlesbrough is that they create no chances. They've got the fewest shots on target in the league, fewest shots on the league, fewest chances created in the league. But they're the best organised by a mile of all of the relegation candidates, whereas Palace are just chaos from top to bottom. How do you see this one panning out?
Well, it's weird because, I mean, with Allardyce, you'd thought the first thing he would sort out would be, you know, making them rigid, difficult to beat, and then they go and lose to Sunderland 4-0. So, I mean, I can see Allardyce setting up with, like, something like six at the back, even though it's Middlesbrough, just to make sure they actually keep a clean sheet.
And he's not played Mamadou Sakho yet.
No.
Who's a great signing.
Who knows what's going on with him? I mean, the fact that he can't get in the side shows that there's just all sorts of problems at Palace, and no one really knows what to do, I don't think.
Next game we wanted to talk about, Everton versus Sunderland. I mean, Moyes going back to Selhurst Park. Lukaku triple captain, Stobes?
I don't play Fantasy League either.
Well, there you go.
But I know what that means. And if I did play it, I'd do it, because he'll score a load. It's a bit like, you know when like a player has a testimonial, and it'd be like Everton against Everton legends.
Yeah,
this is a little bit like, yeah, a little bit.
I
like
think
that.
Every single player on the pitch will have played for Everton in the past 5 years in this game. It's quite remarkable.
Well, Darren Gibson's going to spot Lukaku's runs.
Well, James, we what more can Moyes get from his squad? He's got a pathetic squad, frankly, and he's just sort of it's Hail Mary every single game with Jermaine Defoe.
But he's going to, I mean, they've been to New York, so that Red Hot Chili Peppers concert, that'll have really psyched them up.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, they can come back to a ground entirely empty and bereft of staff, where everyone in the town now hates them. They're gone.
They're going to end up under the bridge. I apologise.
That was good. That was really good.
Yeah, you like that?
That
all right, cool. Really good. Cool. Also, another big relegation game, James. Hull versus Burnley. Two teams with, let's face it, very contrasting styles of play. Two very contrasting managers in Marco Silva and Sean Dyche. Some of the stuff that is happening in the Premier League, so I'm smiling, because some of the stuff that's happening in the Premier League this season doesn't seem real, that we have a situation where Marco Silva's sort of rejuvenated Hull and he's playing Burnley. They're just two Thuma's different managers that you could imagine.
Yeah, well, I mean, I fully thought Hull were dead and buried, I'll be honest. And yes, when Silva was brought in, I questioned it and I thought, you know, Hull, really, for Silva? Like, is he going to be able to get that side playing good attacking football? But somehow he has, and he's got Niasse, who looks like he's a world beater all of a sudden. You know, playing Burnley at home, you know, we all know about Burnley's great record at Turf Moor, but you know, we're back at the KCOM. It could be Hulls, and I think, you know, they're not that far away from safety, really, the rate they're going. I think with Burnley, you know, I actually don't really see them as massive relegation contenders. I think they've sort of done enough to be clear. You know, when you've got teams like Middlesbrough dropping down, I think this one is actually less of a relegation battle.
Mm. Less of a relegation battle.
Less of a relegation battle.
You think these two are staying up?
I do. Yeah. I think they're both staying up.
All right.
Hull were brilliant against Arsenal.
Swansea go to Stamford Bridge, Stobes. They're on a great run of form under Paul Clement. He's another manager who's turned it around. But Chelsea have basically had 2 weeks off because they played in the FA Cup and they rested their first 11. And, you know, it looks like it could be a shuddering sort of fall from grace for Swansea this.
Well, sometimes 2 weeks is too long. I mean, you want to keep a bit of momentum, don't you? Seriously. Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I think Swansea can get something.
What?
I really do.
It's absurd.
Chelsea aren't that good. They aren't. They're very good at counter-attacking and winning games 1-0, but Paul Clement will know how to play against Chelsea. He knows them very well. They've gone to Anfield and won. They gave Man City a great game. They really should have got a draw from that one. They've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, who can find those spaces. And the difficulty against Chelsea is creating those chances. But honestly, I'd give Swansea half a chance. I think Chelsea will probably win, but I've got a feeling Swansea will give them a real game.
James, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I've got a little stat for you, actually. Since Paul Clement took over, Swansea have taken more points in the league than Chelsea. It's a table that's topped, interestingly, as well. And I find this surprising, by Everton. Yeah, I saw Swansea against Man City. They were really good. Yeah, I fancy they could certainly give Chelsea some work. Maybe it's just a 1-0 win to Chelsea.
And Chelsea, I can see a wobble coming. I think they're running away with the title, but they'll be looking at it. If they drop some points they should win. If they drop some points against a side like Swansea, Man City still have to go there. So if that's a 6-point swing there. I really don't think, having thought about it for the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. I really don't think the title's quite as done as people think.
You made it sound as if you've been sitting in a room for
a couple of weeks
just thinking about Chelsea. Just going, I don't buy it.
I think Man City can win the league.
All right. Bold Stobes. I'm loving it. James Dale, I'm coming to you because we've had a look at the agenda and you know what game's next. It's the one that everybody wants to talk about.
Big one.
It's the big one. 5:30 kickoff. Watford versus West Ham.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
That's about it, really. No, I mean, the only thing that would have excited me about this is Andy Carroll, whether he'll play. Probably won't.
Is this a dead rubber, effectively?
I think it is. I'm amazed that Watford are where they are in the Premier League.
It doesn't make sense when you look at the table.
I actually think they're a really poor side. I just don't know how they are where they are, but they are, and that makes this a dull game.
Honest. Anything to add, Mr. Bench?
Don't ask me about this.
The last game between them was great.
It was, actually.
The 4-2.
The disrespectful Rabona.
The disrespect. There's not going to be
Troy
any of that.
Troy Deeney and Etienne Capoue smashing it up.
Yeah.
It was a good game.
Etienne Capoue, when he hits form, he's a brilliant player. Great to watch. The last game to talk about is West Brom versus Bournemouth. Bournemouth rapidly being dragged into the relegation battle because their defence is a piece of rice paper. But West Brom, effectively, their season's over, James. They haven't got anything to play for.
But that means they can cut loose. A thing that no Tony Pulis team has ever done. Cut loose and play for fun. Solomon Rondon against that defence. That's going to be tasty. I've got Rondon in my fancy team and I might triple captain him. No.
Yeah. Triple captaining Rondon, so it sounds like the end of days. Did you expect the same, James? West Brom to run away with it?
Bournemouth don't look the same side without Ake, to be honest. And I fancy West Brom to actually beat them comfortably.
Yeah, Chadders going to destroy them.
Chadders. Chadders and Phillips on either flank. So, it's that time of the week, everyone's favourite feature. It's time for a game of Would You Rather. We ask our panel of esteemed guests, would you rather this or that? And they answer whatever they think. The first one is, and I'm coming to Greg Stobart first, is would you rather be manager of Sunderland or Crystal Palace right now?
Easily Crystal Palace.
Yeah?
Yeah, they actually have some good footballers, so.
Okay.
I mean, they're way below where they should be. They've actually got some talent in their squad and Sunderland have Jermaine Defoe and that's it.
Benj, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in the end, if Palace go down, I mean, there's a few players you've got to get rid of. But, you know, Palace fans are a hardy bunch. They're used to the Championship. I think expectations are a little higher at Sunderland. And though I agree that the Palace squad's a bit better, I think they might both go down. And I'd rather try to rebuild at Palace.
James, Mr. Dale, do you agree with that? Nothing to say about Sunderland's squad harmony?
No, I think I'd much rather manage Palace. I mean, rather than a team of Everton legends.
Everton testimonial every week.
Yeah. The only thing I would say, going back to James's point, if Palace do go down, I actually think they'll be robbed of their entire squad, really, because they are below where they should be. So I think it would be a harder task from the Championship, whereas Sunderland have a bunch of ready-made stalwarts. Palace in the Premier League, Sunderland in the Championship.
Okay, fair enough. Good answer. You added the little caveat there. Good work. Okay, next up, James Benj, coming to you first. Would you rather be Man City's defensive coach or Monaco's defensive coach? We both saw midweek that they have their issues at the back. What would you...
Well, at least there's a sense, though, if I'm Monaco's defensive coach, that I've got time to work with these players. Mm. I mean, Sidibe, and they're like, they're only 22, 23. Alexander Kolarov, Gael Clichy, Pablo Zabaleta. I mean, maybe Zabaleta was good in the past, but they've had years of not being good enough. Mm. I'm not getting anything more out of them. The best I can do is manage their decline. Which whoever's there at the moment
coach them
isn't
quite.
I'll coach them down to a sort of 2-star rating. Yeah, Monaco's every day.
Okay, James, you agree with that?
Yeah, Monaco's purely for the reason that I think if I was City's defensive coach, Pep Guardiola just would not listen to me anyway. So he would just play whatever side he wanted to and just not think about the defence. So
you're finding like get out clause for my would you rather questions. I'm not sure. I'm liking it, but I'm not sure 100% on it. Stobes, this is Man City. You've got some good. There's some good players there.
Not defenders.
No.
No. I wouldn't take a single. I don't think there's a single defender in Man City back squad that would get in any of the rest of the top six.
Wow.
Starting 11s.
Actually, I'd like to revise my answer.
Yeah.
Well, Man City's going to pay me way more.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
No. I'm going to re-revise it. I get to live in Monaco if I...
Yeah, I'll do it for the love of the game anyway. Yeah. And with the Monaco fullbacks, all you need to do is be like, just stop charging forward quite so much, mate. It's not that complicated, really, is it?
Well, it makes it sound so simple.
Yeah, well, maybe I should be a coach.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe you should be coach of Monaco, because the next question, Stobes, is, and James Dale coming to you first for this one, and this is tough. We all saw Monaco midweek. We all loved watching a talent, but I'm going to ask you, Bernardo Silva or Kylian Mbappe?
Well, this is very unlike me because I'm a sucker for a little playmaker, but Mbappe is so Thierry Henry-like. He's probably the only player I've seen that I've actually watched and just, he even moves like him. Mm. That I'm going to go for Mbappe. I think he's 4 years younger as well.
Wow.
So you've got to think about that. Mm. And yeah, I think he's just frighteningly got so much potential. Mm. That doesn't really make sense.
Frightening potential. Can potential be frightening?
It can.
Answers on a postcard. Stobes, Silva or Mbappe?
Bernardo Silva.
Yeah.
He is ready. He's ready made. He's going to get a massive move in the summer, like 60 to 80 million pounds.
Good Lord.
And I think he'll probably end up over here, Man City, Chelsea, whoever, and we'll see just how good he is. He's got quite an interesting history, actually, Silva. I think they got him on loan originally, Monaco. They're going to make a massive profit on him anyway. Just the quality in his left foot, his little skills. That little bit of skill he did against Man City where he's just putting it through everyone's legs. And I think he put Mbappe through as well. He's just top quality. And we love a playmaker, and he's the next one on the production line. He's going to be a brilliant, brilliant footballer.
Otamendi's still looking for Bernardo Silva on pitch. You just couldn't find him. James Bench, Bernardo Silva or Kylian Mbappe?
I've been dreading answering this. I think just about Kylian Mbappe. You know, he's going to be the star of the France national team in the future, and that means playing with a much better class of players as well. And yeah, I think he's just brilliant. Just that raw pace, that finishing. And all that at 19, I can't wait to see where he goes.
Can't keep up with the new Thierry Henry. I thought it was Martial. He's been replaced within a season.
Would you rather Martial or Mbappe?
I don't know, mate.
Let's do one on you, mate.
I'd probably go Martial, personally.
Yeah?
I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league. There you go.
He's one of the most underrated by Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, definitely that. It's not hard to be underrated by Jose Mourinho. Shout out to Luke Shaw. Okay, before we wrap up today, we're going to ask all of our panel one game to watch in Europe this weekend. James Dale, coming to you first. You're getting ready for the weekend. You've done a bit. You've tended to the herb garden. You're thinking, I might go get a Sunday lunch or I might do this. But as part of the cornerstone of your day is one tie around Europe. What are you thinking?
It's got to be Atletico Madrid against Barcelona this weekend. I think off the back of the Champions League results, you know, Atletico Madrid looks so good. And it is just this turning point for Simeone, I think. And, you know, Barcelona in decline. And I'm quite frankly enjoying watching it, to be honest. So I would love to see Atletico, you know, turn the style on against them.
Okay. Look forward to that. James, What's the cornerstone, the cornerstone game of your weekend in between the yoga session and the steam room?
Well, I think mine starts just after the painting challenge on BBC One, which I'm really enjoying.
Good.
It's quite good. It's Inter against Roma. Inter have become kind of less of the comedy clown car that they've been over the past few years under Stefano Pioli. And they're kind of just about in with a shout of reaching the top three, but they need to beat Roma, who are also playing very well. Two really good teams, and I'm really excited to see Icardi up against quite a decent Roma.
Yeah, Manolas versus Icardi could be good. Also worth noting, Roma played pretty much a first-choice 11 against Villarreal in their second leg in midweek, in front of barely a crowd, because they won the first leg 4-0, so no Roma fans turned up.
Inter have the advantage of incompetence and having thrown themselves out of the Europa League, are able to focus on their slightly rubbish.
Well done, Inter. Stobes, in between your heavy manicure and your tanning booth session, what's the game?
How did you know?
Mate, I pay attention to these things. what's your game to watch this weekend?
Sunday night, Marseille against Paris Saint-Germain, Le Classique.
Le Classique.
Is that how you say it?
That is how you say
that
it.
That is how you say it. PSG still hot on the heels of Monaco, which is kind of surprising when you consider PSG have been stumbling quite a lot in the league, and Monaco, it feels like they're winning 5-0 every week. But it's the biggest game still in French football, isn't it? And especially down in Marseille, should be a cracking atmosphere.
A loss for PSG would basically put paid to their title hopes, more or less.
They're only 3 points behind.
I didn't realise it was only 3 points.
That's what I'm saying.
Cool. How have they done that? How have they kept close to Monaco? Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much to Greg Stobart, James Bench from the London Evening Standard, and James Dale from Sky Sports. Thanks very much for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at Squawker, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.